Welcome to Spook Pod. This is Courtney.
And this is Emily.
Welcome to Courtney and Emily to committing things. Committing two things, not committing things. We're not committing murder, I swear.
committing two things. Committing to part two in our case today. Yeah, I feel a little bit out of breath. I just had to like put up a whole bunch of blankets so that I'm not echoey, and now I'm like, it was a workout.
yeah. And I'm workout. Like still getting over a cold. So Courtney's sweaty and I'm phlegmy, and it's gonna be a good time for everyone.
Yeah. But you are listening to Spook Pod, and we have part two in the case of Willem van Eyck, otherwise known as the Beast of Harkstede. So if you haven't listened to part one, definitely go back and listen to that so you get a full picture of this story.
Definitely not a like good dude who got cursed and has a house full of enchanted objects. And a girl and her dad are going to come free him from... That's not the story we're telling.
what is that story? I don't know that story.
It's Beauty and the Beast.
Oh.
You know that story.
The Beast of Harkstede. Yeah, of course I know that story. Mm-hmm. Okay, but just to give you a little brief recap. So where we left you last time, Willem had been convicted of the manslaughter of two people, which was 15-year-old Cora Mantle and 44-year-old Altje Vanderplaat. And for those crimes, he spent 15 years both in prison and in a psychiatric facility. And while he was in prison, he married a woman named Adri.
Whose morals in life I question, but you know, that's her business.
Then in 1990, he was fully released and allowed to live a normal life with his wife. Normal,
I was one. I was 1 year old. I couldn't have done anything to prevent this because I was 1 year old.
I was not born yet. Well, depending on when in 1990 it was, but I'm born later in the year, so I'm going to say probably not. Yeah, so he moved with his wife to the village of Harkstede, which is near Groningen. They moved into a little farmhouse. And I left you on a little bit of a cliffhanger in part one because, as we know now, Willem is known as the Beast of Harkstede. And it's just now in the story that he's moving here for the first time. So in today's episode, we're going to get into what he did to earn this nickname. Because over the course of the next 11 years, the city of Groningen would be completely shocked by a series of murders of prostitutes, like many. So just in case you didn't know, just to give a little bit of a story time here, prostitution is legal in the Netherlands.
It became damn straight. Damn smart. Straight. Smart move.
It became fully legal in 1999, so that's kind of like toward the end of this story, but it was before that decriminalized on a large scale, and people in the Netherlands have a very tolerant view towards prostitution. So yeah, it's considered a completely normal job. Like, prostitutes pay taxes on their earnings, and I looked up their salaries, and like, they make a shitload of money.
Of course, like, they do. Of course they, yeah. They're good. Most of the prostitutes in the Netherlands know what they're doing. Like, this isn't
yeah, this isn't like amateur hour.
This isn't some drugged up girl on the corner of a, you know,
well, some of them are, but
slum. No. I mean, like the ones you see in America where they're like, I do a lot of meth. No, this isn't what happens. They're paid.
Yeah.
They're paid legally for their work.
And it's really regulated, right? Because it's legal. So like, I think they go, I don't know the exact amount of time, but I feel like every 3 months they have like mandated like health checks and stuff.
I assume like just like anyone working in the porn industry would.
Yeah.
Similar exactly. Situation.
Yeah.
I think the benefit probably is that you don't have to worry about having like a pimp situation or like a madame or whatever who would like regulate a specific prostitute's
exactly,
work.
Exactly, because it's like, if somebody does something to you, you can go to the police because you weren't doing anything wrong, right?
And be like, hi, I clocked in for my 8 a.m. shift and this guy came and decided to do... And I was not impressed.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to do my job, sir. I don't...
Yeah, I've actually, like, I've been to the red light district in Amsterdam a couple times, like, just walked through it, and I think it's, like, it's so cool there. It's really cool. I love it. But yeah, I'm not gonna go into, like, a full history of prostitution in the Netherlands, because it's a bit more than the scope of this podcast.
I mean, good lord, even the words history and prostitution together, it's the oldest profession.
Yeah. There's, like, I mean, it's, like, as old as...
We can't even touch on it. Yeah, yeah. Like, it just goes back till, you know what, there's, as long as there's been people, there's been prostitution. Yeah. I'm sure in, like, Neanderthal society, somebody was selling something for that extra hunk of beef. So, like, let's be real here.
For sure. But if you want to know a bit more of it, I did link to, like, a little overview of prostitution in the Netherlands. So you can read that if you want. But yeah, suffice it to say for this podcast that at this time in history, the Netherlands is very tolerant towards prostitutes. And unfortunately, like, we see a lot that prostitutes are often victim pools, right, for a lot of serial killers, like Jack the Ripper, Green River Killer, you could name a whole bunch of them. It's pretty unfortunate, but they are a vulnerable population for this. And there's a lot of reasons for that. We don't really need to get super detailed into it. One of the reasons being that a lot of societies look down on prostitutes, so their disappearances, like, don't get the attention they deserve, right? But that's not the case in the Netherlands. Another thing, this population tends to be a bit more of, like, the drifter type people. And they usually, not always, but, like, usually don't have a really strong social network. So if they're drifting around and don't really have anyone to notice that they're missing, then... Yeah, so we're going to see that a little bit in some of the stories I'm going to share today. So just keeping that in mind. But coming back to Willem. So, well, him and Audrey got married in 1982, right? So, like, surprisingly... They had a pretty stable relationship from 1982 until 1990 when Willem was released. But it probably would not surprise you that as soon as Willem was released, their whole relationship basically just went to complete shit. It did not
also,
take
like,
long.
Can you, like, honestly say you have a good relationship with someone if they're, like, regulated in a jail setting? Like,
right?
Oh, yeah,
like,
my boyfriend doesn't cheat on me in his jail full of other men.
And I get to see him, like, for 1 hour on Sundays, so,
I
like,
think we're a great match.
Yeah.
We hang out for an hour a week.
Like, the whole honeymoon stage, like, he's in jail, right? Like,
if I only had to hang out with someone for an hour a week, I'd probably be okay with that person, too. And then you throw me into life with them full time, and...
Yeah, and then you
I get
like,
where Willem's coming from.
Yeah. Yeah, so things went to shit very quick. Like, within 6 months of Willem being released, he began drinking really heavily. He became physically abusive toward Audrey, and she moved out, left him with the farmhouse, and within a year, they were fully divorced. So.
How shocking that your jailhouse marriage didn't... I can't.
Yeah.
Stupidest thing.
Super shocking. I'm sure we're all very surprised about that. But now... fucking Willem. And this was one of the reasons why he got out too, because they were like, oh wow, he's had such a stable relationship with Audrey, things are gonna go great for him. And they even said too, they were like, if things don't go great for this relationship, like, he's gonna spiral.
So here's where you would think that, like, on a probation basis, they would be checking in on his relationship.
Right.
You know, like, I know it's the 80s, but you still have probation, and you still, like, what is the Netherlands doing where they're, like, just not checking?
Yeah, I'm really confused with this case specifically for that, because I'm sure the Netherlands has, like, a system of...
Because especially, like, having their mental health care that they do, and going through that before you're released, and being like, this relationship is critical to his, like, rehabilitation, and if the relationship is gone, the rehabilitation is gone, you would think that when that divorce happens, it would be like, oh, do you need counseling and or more jail time?
Yeah. And they, sometimes, like, they seem a little bit, like, naive to me, where they're like, if he was experiencing problems and he didn't go to get therapy, like, oh my gosh, that's so bad. And it's like, why would he do that if it puts his freedom at risk? You know, like, no one's gonna do that. He's gonna,
like, if he's already gone out, if he's already gone out and ganked a prostitute, he's not gonna go find a therapist and be like, doctor, I fell off the wagon.
Yeah, so Willem did very quickly, after being released, go on a huge downward spiral. And now he's living in a house alone, too. Like, he can get up to whatever shady business he wants to. So he drinked. He drank.
So did I.
really heavily. And he often invited prostitutes back to his house, too.
Okay, another thing. I'm still stuck on this divorce thing. Because, like, Audrey doesn't seem stable. I'm just going to throw that out there. So, you've spent your time invested in your jail boyfriend. You get married. He comes out. He turns out to be the trash that everyone knew he was. He beats you. He starts drinking. He makes your life hell. And then you get divorced. Are you not immediately just going to start shit talking him to, like, all of the authorities? She's already on the crazy train. So I'm not quite sure how this happened. Sorry. Continue. Well, still working through it.
The thing that we'll talk about a bit later is, like, yeah, so while Willem was, like, going about his crazy ways, prostitutes began either going missing or turning up dead. And Willem actually was a suspect the entire time, but it took a really long time for them to be able to, like, kind of nail him with it. So yeah, I'm going to go over some of the disappearances now. I don't go into super disturbing detail. There's a couple of gross parts, I'll warn you. But I'm just going to go over some of the women that went missing during this time in chronological order, too. So,
ooh, we getting fancy and organized now. All right.
Yeah, I organized it so good. So on Friday, November 5th, 1993, again, like, this is about 3 years after Willem has been out, a naked, murdered, nameless woman was found in a ditch in the Zouderweg between the village of Zoudhorn, located, like, west of Groningen, and a place called Enumatil. Cannot say that one. It took police...
Emu land. It looks like emu.
It took police, like, quite a while to figure out who this was, but it turned out to be a 23-year-old woman of Romanian descent. Her name was Antonella Bertholda Michelle Fatol, and she went just by Michelle Fatol. And she had worked as a prostitute. The investigation initially led to no leads, even after they offered a reward of 25,000 guilders. And this case would go cold and would go unsolved for about 8 years. Then, the next year, in December of 1994, a prostitute named Annelise Reinders was reported missing. Not a lot of progress was being made in finding her until 6 weeks later, on January 21st, 1995, her body was found in a canal. She had rope around her neck, and her case would go unsolved for 6 years. Another prostitute, this one is a little bit more graphic, so skip it if you want to, but it's Antoinette Bont. She was 24 years old. And she was found dead in 1995. So again, the next year, we're on, like, a yearly streak here. And when she was found, it was just her torso that was found in a canal. And then a little bit later, her limbs were found in a sports bag, but her head was never found. In 1997, Shirley Hereikers was found dead. I've spoken about her before in the... I can't talk today.
It's fine. Don't need to.
In another episode, the one on Anna de Ruyter de Vilt. Because I personally think that her death is more attributable to Hank S., the guy we talked about in that case. But a lot of people still do. Like, her case was never solved. Hank was not found guilty. He was acquitted of her murder. And a lot of people do kind of still contribute her death to Willem. And then there was Yolanda Meyer. She was a prostitute, and she was actually close friends with Shirley. So Yolanda was a regular at Willem's house, and everything indicates that she was murdered, but her body has never been found. And I found quite a bit of information on her because her family has really been tirelessly looking for her for so many years now. Like, they're still looking for her to this day, and my heart really goes out to them. So I'm just going to share a bit about Yolanda here. So Yolanda went missing on February 7th, 1998, when she was 35 years old. And again, went the years that Willem was released. And Yolanda, she had a bit of a rough life growing up and had fallen into the wrong crowd and became addicted to drugs. And when she was 16, she ran away from home. And by the time she was 21, she had two young sons. So to survive, she started working as a prostitute, first in the red light district, like behind the windows, and then also in clubs, and later on just as a streetwalker. On February 7th, police received a noise complaint from a known drug house, and when they investigated there, they saw Yolanda there, and they took down her information. From there, she left the drug house, and she was never seen again. In April, it was her son's birthday. She didn't say anything, which was really not like her. So then in May, her parents reported her missing. Fast forward 2 years, and her passport was thrown into the mailbox of the police station. And the police...
Sketchy.
Yeah, weird, right? The police were able to track down the person who did this. And yeah, it is a little bit suspicious. So it was a truck driver, and he said that he found her passport in the glove compartment of his truck. So he just threw it in the police mailbox. This truck driver was apparently like a regular customer of streetwalkers, but he wanted to really keep that quiet. So some people think that he may have done something to her, but personally, I don't know. I think if he had done something to her, he probably would have disposed of her passport in another way.
Just cut it up and set it on fire. Why are you dropping it to the police?
Yeah, exactly. I kind of think that, like, the reason he just gave it to the police was he wanted it to be found and...
Also, that is not me telling you to destroy an official government document with fire. I just need to be clear on that.
So another suspect was named too. It was a 37-year-old man named Ad K. First name Ad, last name just the initial K. And he was arrested after a tip from a prostitute that he had confessed to her that he killed Yolanda. She said that he was in possession of photographs of where he buried her body. So the police...
Oh, okay, this is going to sound terrible, but that Nickelback song just, like, popped into my head.
The photograph one?
Yeah.
Look at that photograph.
Sorry, everyone. I'm traumatized. PTSD. Let's keep going.
It's a terrible song. Nickelback is, like, Canadians do not like Nickelback. They're Canadian.
There is one Nickelback album that I will listen to. Everything else is trash.
So the police did arrest this guy, and they did find photographs of a forest. The forest was near a place called Mensingevær. So they found these photographs and they did an extensive search, but nothing was found. The guy denied all involvement and then was released due to a lack of evidence. Interestingly, right after this guy was released, the prostitute that made the tip on him disappeared, and she has not been found either. So
I'm gonna need the Netherlands to be better at, you know?
That's a little interesting tidbit there. Over the years, like, there has been so much done to find Yolanda. Everything from, like, searching with dogs in areas because of tips from a psychic. Like, her parents put up posters literally everywhere, like, across the country, along the border. They received tons of tips over the years of possible places that she could be buried, and they searched each and every one of them, but they've never found Yolanda. According to Sietse van der Zee, he's the guy who interviewed Willem multiple times and wrote the books on him, he thinks it's possible that Willem could have done this because, again, Yolanda was a regular, Willem was a regular customer of Yolanda. And while he was being interviewed by this author, he regularly, like, mixed up data. So, like, as an example, he was talking about the murder of somebody else, Annelise Reinders, and he said that it happened in the winter. Oh, sorry, he said that it happened in the summer, but actually it happened in the winter. So people were thinking, like, is he confusing this with Yolanda because she went missing in the summer? So
it's hard to keep track of all the women you've murdered.
Yeah, exactly. Fuck.
It's pesky when you don't even learn their names because they're just meat sacks and ugh.
So
what season?
What season? I don't remember. So the author speculated that he could have done this. Adri, Willem's ex-wife, also made speculations, and she thinks that Willem murdered Yolanda and that she was fed to the pigs on Willem's property.
Do you think, okay, so, like, hang on. When was our pig guy? When was the Canadian pig guy?
Willie Picton? He wasn't caught that long ago. I was, like,
but I remember it, yeah.
It surprised me because I thought that was, like, when I heard of it, I thought that it was a case from, like, a long time ago, but he wasn't caught that long ago. Willie
20
Picton.
Years. 20 years. Hang on. So let me... When was he actually... Oh, see, he went into 2002, because I was like, maybe they were buddies. But, hey, 1998 and 2002 aren't that far apart. Maybe they chatted a lot, and William was like, listen...
Over the newly formed internet...
Robert William Picton and Willem, both Williams, sorry, Williams, I'm having it out for you right now, had a little chit-chat, decided pigs are the way to go. It's not that the internet existed. This isn't impossible. I just think it's strange that they're around the same time two dudes were feeding people to pigs. That's all I'm saying.
I feel like probably lots of people have unfortunately been fed to
pigs. Listen, do not. Poor little pigs. I feel bad for pigs.
I know,
just
because
they are opportunistic eaters, people are like, here's a human being. Rude.
You know who else is an opportunistic eater is me. Like, whenever someone offers me food, I'm like, hell yeah.
Listen, don't make it out like you eat people. Someone slaps a plate of meat down in front of me, I don't even ask what it is. I just munch away.
That makes me think of that Always Sunny episode too,
where they're trying to eat people.
Yeah.
What a demented show. Okay.
Yeah. But I also just want to say, like, no evidence of this has ever been found that Willem fed anybody to pigs. Like,
it wouldn't be found. The pigs ate it and then done.
Well, yeah, but, like, I feel like there could be further evidence. Like, I don't know.
What, like piggy droppings with a rib bone in it? That's not going to happen.
Well, I just want to say that this just came fully and only from Audrey, and we know how she is, so.
batshit crazy. But
I don't want
to
victim blame.
This is around the same time when feeding people to pigs was a big deal.
So in 2007, Yolanda's father passed away, but her mother continues to search for her daughter to this day. And there is still, like, a reward for information about Yolanda. So, hey, if anyone listening...
If you are a pig and you have eaten Yolanda, feel free. Feel free to reach out to our victim hotline.
And you'll get a nice reward. Oh my gosh, that's awful. Okay, let's go back to Willem.
I've never claimed to be a good person. I'm just going to say that.
Back to Willem. As I mentioned a little bit ago, like, while all of this was going on, while all these prostitutes were going missing or found dead, Willem was a suspect. I'm really having a hard time, like, pronouncing
words. What is happening
today
to your face today?
It is not saying things correctly. So the police knew about Willem. They conducted investigations on him throughout this time, but there was no evidence against him at this point. When they interviewed him, he just said, like, I'm not involved. I didn't do this. They looked at phone records. They also showed, like, Willem was not the last person to contact any of these women, although he had used their services before. So there was really nothing to hold him on at this point, but he was at least on their radar.
I wish you could just arrest people for being a creepy motherfucker.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel like, I just, like, I have a feeling you're weird and I'd like to arrest you.
Just like his appearance alone. I wasn't going to say this because it was, like, appearance related, but I read that, like, he had a really, like, sunken face, and when he got angry, his eyes, like, rolled into the back of his head. They said it, like, looked demonic, and I was like, ooh, creepy.
Again, Audrey, what are you doing, buddy?
And it wasn't just murders of prostitutes that Willem was suspected of around this time. Like, even cases that we covered before, like the Anna de Ruyter de Vilt, he was a suspect in her murder. He was also a suspect in Mariana Vostra's murder. But DNA had ruled him out in all of these cases.
I kind of love that all of these people being killed around this time, and they're just like, oh, listen, there's this guy. We think he's killing people.
His name is Willem. He's really creepy.
Like, this murder didn't happen anywhere near him, but I do want to have his DNA checked out because vibes, you know?
Yeah. And I want to just emphasize, like, how much fear was in the community at this time, like, especially for prostitutes in the area. This was a really scary time because murders are not super common in the Netherlands, and to have, like, one city experiencing a lot and just of, like, a certain population, it was really scary for the community during this time. But, like, when it came to Willem, right, like, a lot of these prostitutes were frequent customers of his. So I think on their part, they probably felt safe with him because they're like, I've been here many times. I know this guy.
Sure, his face is a little weird, but we can get past that for the money.
Yeah, like, things went fine before. So, yeah.
But also, can I just say, like, if I was a prostitute, I feel like I'd be a slight bit more discerning, because if I showed up to creepy McBackwoods farm and sunken face McRoly eyes open the door, I'd be like, yeah, this one time it'll happen, and then, like, no more.
It's not worth it.
Your pigs look hungry.
But yeah, this was all until in November of 2001, so he's been out for more than 10 years at this point. The body of Sasia Schenker, like, practically washed up on the shore in front of Willem's house.
Yeah, explain that one away, Sassy.
He was arrested very shortly after that, and after a really lengthy interrogation, He confessed to 3 murders. So just 3. To Michelle Fatol, to Annelise Reinders, and to Sasia Schenker. So when it came to Michelle, he says that this is the first murder that he did after he was released from prison. She was murdered in 1993.
I call bullshit.
He said he picked her up for prostitution. They were in his car at a remote spot caressing each other when he said that he felt a sudden strange feeling came over him. And he said he squeezed her throat until he felt her go limp.
Again, we've talked about this. Do you know how, like, manual strangulation takes so long?
Yeah. And it's not easy.
So long. No, you're exerting yourself that whole time.
People are fighting back, and yeah. He then drove her in his car, dead and naked, to the ditch where he disposed of her body. He also confessed to the murder of Annelise Reinders, which he said happened in a really similar way to Michelle's. And when he confessed to Sasia's murder, hers was a bit different. So she was murdered in Willem's house. And Sasia was a regular customer of his as well. And unfortunately, she was also addicted to drugs. She came to his house for like a sexual contact at his request. After this, she fell asleep on his couch and woke up to Willem hitting her on the head with a beer bottle. Willem said he just did this on a whim. Just hit her.
So I feel like I get that part. Because, like, do you know how many times I've been with, like, a friend, a person I actually, like, really like and care about, and I've just been like, God, I want to punch him in the tit. And, like, or just, like, what? Like, I just want to grab your head and bash it off my knee and then be done. You just have those, like, weird little impulses, and then you let them go, and they're gone. So I get it.
I don't have hit her with a beer bottle like that, Emily.
Yeah.
Are you sure you want to admit this?
Yes, because I've talked to other people about this, and they're like, yeah, I want to hit you too. And I'm like, okay, we're good. We're fine. It's fine. it's just that friendship. It's fine.
Well,
but yeah, I get it.
After...
You just get the impulse. But most people don't act on it. Can I just say that? Like... It's like the pinching a baby's cheeks thing when you're just like, I want to just like pinch your little fat face.
Yeah, you're
but
like,
you don't do it.
I can't love you hard enough. I feel that way about my cat. I'm always like, oh, I can't love you hard enough because I would hurt you.
You're so weird about his legs. It's fine.
Yeah. It's weird.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
It's a weird relationship. Okay. All right, I understand it in the context of my cats.
Not other people, just my cats.
So after Sasia gets hit in the head with the beer bottle, obviously she wants to leave. But Willem wouldn't let her. He held her captive for hours, and then he ended up strangling her. And then afterwards, he lowered her body into a canal right near his home, where she would later wash up. 2 days later, he also dumped her moped and helmet in Groningen so that it would look like she was last there. After they found Sasia's body in this water, divers took a look in there and they found 3 bags of clothing, literally like right in front of his house and weighed down by stones. 1 bag belonged to Michelle, 1 to Annelise, and 1 to Sasia. So the 3 murders that he confessed to.
Okay, so, like, I don't know if this is, like, a trophy thing, but again, does this man not know what fire is?
During his interview with police, he said that these 3 new cases were different from the ones he was convicted of before. So whereas before, he said that he dreamed of killing women and then proceeded, like, according to plan, these ones, he said, they were all on a whim. I don't think I buy that. Also, if you murder 3 people on a whim, something is wrong.
Yes, because again, I have the whims for violence, but I've never done the whims for violence, you know? You dismiss it because you're like, that's a crazy thought, and then you let it go. You don't do the thing.
On October 24th, 2002, he went on trial again for these three new murders, and prosecutors also did not buy that Willem acted impulsively, and they demanded life in prison for him. And the court found him guilty of all three murders, and when it came to his sentencing, they took a number of factors into consideration. They spoke on how, obviously, this was three young women who were cruelly robbed of their lives. And for the relatives, some of them had to go for years without knowing the details of how their loved one died. The disappearance also caused a huge amount of social unrest in the community, especially among the prostitutes, who are already like a vulnerable population. And then, of course, they also took into account the fact that Willem had already been found guilty of similar crimes and had served jail time and participated in psychiatric care for these, which apparently did him no good. So
because it was the marriage that held everything together. Was that his wife?
The marriage that lasted a few months after he got out.
Yeah. That linchpin relationship that he was in.
So because of all of this, they felt that his risk of doing it again was very high, rightfully so, and he was sentenced to life in prison. This time, he was given no psychiatric care. They just classified him as untreatable, so they sentenced him to life in prison, like, go in there and fucking rot. That's it. This is the first time, actually, in one of our cases that someone was sentenced to, like, full life in prison, like, no chance of getting out. We've always...
He already had his chance to get out, and then he murdered more people.
Yeah. But of course, because Willem, being the dingbat that he is, he appealed his decision to a higher court. In his appeal, he read a statement through his lawyer, and I translated it into English, so this is what it said. "I killed those women. It's horrible. I didn't want that. It happened to me, too."
Oh my god, I'm already so mad.
Right?
So mad. From like three sentences, I'm so mad.
I was like, it happened to you too? What?
No, it didn't happen. You did it. Sorry. Yeah. Okay, keep going. Angry at him though.
He said, "I didn't plan it in advance. It's still a mystery to me what caused me to act this way. I tried to reason that out with the police afterwards, to reason out what happened and how. I talked openly, I thought along with them, and together with the police, I tried to put the pieces of the puzzle in the right place. But now, I'm pinned to the words that they used to record those conversations. I'm not a monster. I didn't want this all that much." Like, I like that part. "I didn't want this all that much."
All that much.
I mean, this is a translation from Dutch, so. But, yeah. "I didn't want that all that much either. Saying you're sorry sounds easy, but I am sorry. I wish I could undo it, even at the cost of my own life."
Can you imagine if this is how the law worked? That you sat down and talked it out with the policeman and you figured out why you did the crime? And then you were just good to go?
Yeah, like, oh, we put the puzzle pieces together. Now I understand. Yeah.
Me and the cops collaborated on my crime and figured out why I did it. And now I'm good. We're good to go. I don't need to be arrested.
Yeah, I don't need life in prison. No. Luckily, this bullshit statement had no effect on the court, and the appeals court maintained his sentence to fucking rot in prison for the rest of his life. But again, Willem was a fucking little baby about it and appealed this all the way to the Supreme Court. Finally, in 2005, the Supreme Court refused to hear his case. They stated that his sentence was perfectly fair, and it was finally official. Willem van Eyck would spend the rest of his life in prison. He was 62 at this point. At first, he moved around a lot because he was a huge troublemaker. So at first he went to a penitentiary in Zwolle, then to one in Maastricht, and then because he had like serious behavioral problems that nobody could handle, he was moved to a prison. It was called Vught, which is apparently like a much tougher prison. And good news, Emily, he had a miserable time there.
Didn't think he'd do well. He doesn't seem like the blending in type.
Everyone in prison hated him. Like, he was on the lowest rung of the ladder that you could possibly be on, and he was attacked constantly. So much so that he, like, wouldn't even leave his cell. He was too afraid to. In 2016, his farmhouse was demolished. During the demolition, they searched, like, for more evidence or bodies, such as the body of Yolanda, but nothing was found. And this area is now a residential area.
Hey.
Then, on June 19th, 2019, at the age of 77, still in Vught prison, Willem died. His cause of death was not released, so we actually don't know if it was, like, natural causes or if he got beat up or something. So, yeah. But may he rot. May he rot.
I'm really hoping it wasn't natural.
Something just a little bit painful, maybe.
Yeah.
So, to summarize, in the years that Willem was out of prison, at least 6 prostitutes were killed, but maybe more. Some sources say 8 or more. I couldn't find a lot of, like, full records on it. But only 3 of these murders were officially solved. And they are the 3 in this case. Michelle Fatwell, Annelise Reinders, and Sasia Schenker. We also spoke about Shirley Hereichers, and she's the one I think is attributed to Hank S. But the other 2 we spoke about, Antoinette Bont and Yolanda Meyer, these cases were never solved, and of course Yolanda has never been found. So if Willem killed Moore, he never admitted to it, and he was actually very adamant that these 3 people were the only people that he ever killed after prison. They also did a really extensive search of his property, of course, and nothing more was found. So, what do you think, Emily? Do you think he killed more people?
Of course he killed more people. I don't even, you know, the one who's like, this is my first one? I doubt that was his first one. Like,
I think he did more too, because there are a lot that are unsolved, and he confessed to the ones that they had clear evidence for, right? Like, he's not going to confess.
He confessed to the ones whose clothes he had floating under his house.
Yeah, exactly. He's not going to confess.
He was probably like, oh, they are going to know for sure.
Yeah,
that those 3, I have to own up to those ones. But the rest of them, I burned their clothes, so we're good.
Yeah. I got smart later and burned their clothes. Yeah, he's not going to confess to more than he needs to, so obviously. Yeah, but I think that he did more, too. I think that he was, like, a true serial killer in the sense that, like, he liked doing this. He set out to do this, and
he probably escalated, too, right? Like, they're very, like, evenly spaced out, but that doesn't make sense with, like, what we know of serial killers. They tend to, like, get a little more aggressive as they go on. So I feel like,
yeah. And they get sloppy as they go on, yeah, too, right? Like, the last one he just, like, put in the water right in front of his house. Like, they get sloppy. Although,
just did, like, an Ophelia down the stream kind of thing with her and just, like.
The one with Antoinette, I don't know. I'm not sure, because it really wasn't his, like, MO.
Style?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that one feels very aggressive, but at the same time, like, he's also batshit, so.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, none of the other ones, like, the other ones, he just dropped their bodies somewhere, but Antoinette was, like, really cut
chopped
up.
Chopped up.
So, yeah. Not sure, but listeners, what do you think? Do you think Willem killed Moore? It sucks, too, because, like, now he obviously can't admit to anymore. He's dead, but I think I do kind of wish that he rotted a little bit longer in prison before dying,
right? Like, made it deep into his 80s.
Yeah,
full of fear.
Yeah,
would be great.
Yeah,
yeah,
I agree.
Yeah,
yeah. But that is the end of our case today. That's the story of one of the Dutch serial killers, the Beast of Harkstede. So thank you so much for listening, and we will see you back later.
Yeah, I'm going to go watch Beauty and the Beast now so that I can have better thoughts about beasts.
I will too. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. If you liked this episode, please listen, rate, review, and follow all episodes of Spook Pod. New ones are out every other Friday. Available now for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to chat? Email us at thespookpod@gmail.com or follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and Reddit at SpookPod.
For a full list of episodes, more deets, or to see what's coming next, visit our website, spookpod.com.
This has been a presentation of Mostly Awkward Media.
See you next time.